This video, new in overnight from Portland, Oregon. Police firing tear gas at protesters.
All you have to do is look at Portland. Look at the agitators. Look at the anarchists in Portland.
I över två månader har tårgas, brandrök, gummikulor och sirener fyllt nattluften i delstaten Oregons huvudstad Portland. Natt efter natt beger sig hundratals demonstranter ut för att protestera mot polisvåldet, både genom fredliga demonstrationer men också genom organiserade aktioner mot olika myndighetsbyggnader. Och natt efter natt drabbar de samman med de poliser som man demonstrerar mot. Och det som började som massiva Black Lives Matter-protester i maj har under sommaren utvecklats till någonting annat. Och responsen från myndigheterna har stundtals varit brutala. Inte minst från Donald Trump som kallat demonstranterna för terrorister, hotat sätta in militären. Och under juli dök filmer upp som visade hur federala poliser i hyrda skåpbilar mitt på dagen omhändertog människor som misstänktes deltagit i demonstrationerna trots att de inte misstänktes för några brott. Men vad är det då som gör att protesterna i Portland har blivit så långvariga och våldsamma? Robert Evans är frilansjournalist, radioprofil och författare och bor själv i Portland. Och sedan demonstrationerna inleddes har han i stort sett varje natt befunnit sig på gatorna för att dokumentera allt som händer. Och vi ber honom ge sin syn på bakgrunden till eskaleringen till dagens situation.
It started out as... I guess, you know, one of many nationwide BLM protests in the wake of George Floyd's death. And, you know, the protests have stayed pretty rooted in Black Lives Matter, but they've also turned into, you know, basically they just kept going. You know, the Portland police are a notoriously violent police force. Current data suggests that they've had, by an order of magnitude, more per capita excessive force claims made against them in the last 60 days than any other police force in the country. And so they kept responding to these protests with escalating violence and tear gassing, in a lot of cases, just huge chunks of the city. So there would be a number of times where people would protest and would like arrive at a fence or something and be very peaceful, and the police would just gas huge chunks of the city. So that kept people coming out, and, you know, it started the first couple of week or two, you would get very large protests on a nightly basis, and that died down, kind of in mid-June in particular, to about, you know, 100-150 most weeknights, 300 or so people on a weekend. But the protests were every day, and every night, and they would very often end in tear gas and a lot of police violence. And at about the 40-ish day mark, you know, the feds got involved. And, you know, the feds started by breaking up these very small gatherings out in front of the courthouse that were, you know, kind of at most responsible for some mild graffiti. And they would do it with, you know, these very aggressive arrests. You know, you saw the snatch vans and stuff, but also with just a tremendous amount of violence. So, like, they shot Donovan LaBella in the head for playing music in front of the courthouse. So that obviously outraged everybody when the video of Donovan went viral and then the video of the snatch vans went viral. It became sort of a national issue, and thousands of people started showing up in the streets again on a nightly basis. And this went on for a little over a week and a half. You know, now we're back to the feds have kind of withdrawn and aren't coming out anymore. Still small nightly protests out in front of the courthouse and Justice Center. But now protesters are starting to gather in different parks around the city and march towards other police buildings on a nightly basis. Like last night, people went after the East Precinct for the first time and attempted to batter down the door and, you know, damage the door and lit some fires out in front of it. And then, you know, there was a riot declared and the police chased people all night and, you know, ended the evening tear gassing, not just protesters, but a number of people who lived in the area. I think a trailer park got hit pretty bad. So that's sort of the situation in broad as we kind of now are in well into August, you know, and this all started on kind of mass demonstrations started on the 29th of May. So now it's August, whatever the hell it is, August 6th. So it's been quite a while.
We've seen footage of journalists just as yourself being targeted by police and almost being seen as part of the activists. How have your experiences with the police been trying to document this on site?
You know, I have had a couple of tense run-ins with them, including one last night, where, you know, they've attempted to order me to disperse, or, you know, I've even gotten a couple of threats of being arrested. It has not been nearly as bad for me as it has been for other journalists. I think some of this is the fact that just sort of the nature of my reporting, I haven't come directly into contact with them as often as some other people have. It's also, I think, that because I work for a very, very large company and they're aware of who I am as a rule, they're a little bit more careful with me because I work for iHeartRadio and our lawyers are very frightening people. And I mean that in the nicest way possible to our lawyers. But yeah, last night we had a situation where they told, I filmed them telling a couple of reporters that they were closing down a street. So there's a restraining order, a federal restraining order against the police of Portland, stopping them from arresting press or from telling press where to go. So they can't disperse press. They can't order them away when there's a riot or an unlawful assembly. And they can't tell them where to film from. The judge specifically like gave the example of press standing in the middle of a street. The police cannot tell them to, you know, they have to be elsewhere, like on a sidewalk or something. So last night there was a situation where they cornered the crowd and the crowd like pulled back into this neighborhood and the police basically walled off the street with their bodies. And there were some press who were trying to get through. And then on our left, they started doing the same thing and ordering people up onto a sidewalk where there really wasn't a sidewalk. And yeah, I yelled at them a couple of times about like, you don't have the right to tell us where to be as press, you know, based on the restraining order. And my colleague Garrison Davis actually kept stepping forward towards the police line. And he was never close enough that he was interfering with their duties in any legal way, but they started really going after him. And you know, there were a couple of tense things exchanged. I shouted a couple of things about the TRO. Finally, Garrison kind of pulled his mask up to very loudly informed them that they didn't have the right to tell him where he could or could not film. One of the cops said he was about to get arrested, but then kind of at the last minute, they all just pulled back and left. And so you keep having these tense moments where you're like, you're doing your job and you know that you're within kind of the letter of the law. But, you know, you might get arrested still, right? You might get tackled to the ground and assaulted, and you never quite know the extent to which the police are going to play by the rules.
So why do you think the protests have been so prolonged and so heated over such a long time?
I think a lot of it just has to do with the level of violence that our police dispensed, right? You know, these are very much still Black Lives Matter protests, but there's a personal element to them, right? Most of the people involved in these protests who are out on like a regular basis have all been injured by the police and have friends who have been injured and some injured by the police. They've all been through very traumatizing situations in which they're surrounded by tear gas and like clutching hands of riot. Just like these, there's been such excessive use of force that people into it as well. You know, it is not purely a response to sort of this national problem of police devaluing Black lives. There's a personal element to it. And that does keep people out in the streets. It makes people kind of more willing to fight. And I think there's also kind of a widespread belief, whether or not it's accurate, that if these demonstrations stop and kind of the police get much of a chance to really breathe and kind of consolidate, they will start going after activists in their homes. Kind of in the way this has just happened in Eugene, right? Where they went after 14 people in their homes for things like aiding and abetting rioting or whatever. Like I don't know how many of these turn these gonna stick. But there is also, I think, kind of this feeling that the Portland Police Bureau needs to be defeated as an organization, different responses depending on who you ask at these events. But I do think there's a wide belief that kind of we can't stop now. This has already gone on so long and been so ugly. Even if we take like a week off, we're essentially giving up, we're letting the movement die, and we're also endangering ourselves by doing that.
Has there been any attempts to negotiations between the activists and law enforcement?
They fired early on, and I think this was in response to the police tear gassed a peaceful crowd after claiming that someone had tried to break into the federal courthouse. And then the next day had to post to be like, had to admit that they had been wrong. No one had tried to break into the courthouse. It had been an error on their part, and they'd gassed people for a mistake they made. So the police chief quit not long after that. And the police continued to tear gas. The minimum count since this all started is 96 tear gassings. I think it's significantly higher. I had Newsy go over my footage from just the month of June, and I personally was tear gassed 50 times in June. That's on camera. And there were some times when I wasn't filming. So it's kind of hard, and it kind of depends on how you count a tear gassing, you know, to determine how many times they've gassed us. But it has been a very significant gas deployed, right? And at this point, between the police and the feds, I don't think there's a more heavily tear gassed place in the world than downtown Portland.
Previously in your journalistic career, you've been a foreign reporter and a war correspondent on the front lines of armed conflict in the Middle East. How would you compare these 2 months of covering Portland to your experience as a war correspondent?
There's an aspect of it that almost feels like play war, right? Because you have a lot of the same kind of visual and auditory stimuli, and it's very intense and your adrenaline's pumping in that way that it does in combat. But the weapons, if you, again, are properly equipped, are very unlikely to cause you serious harm for most people. That's obviously not always the case. There's people who died from tear gas exposure. You know, rubber bullets can cause permanent injury. That said, some of the nights that we've had, July 4th comes to mind, and a number of the nights against the feds, are so intense and so aggressive and involves so many munitions flying in all directions that it feels as close as you can get to war without there being live rounds used. Like it's very intense at times.
You mentioned a number of charges against the Portland Police Department during the summer as a reason for the prolonged conflicts. But Portland has prior to this been described as sort of a hub for activists and far left movements. How has that played a part?
Portland has a long history of street activism. And in fact, there were so many protests against, I think it was Dan Quayle coming here in the 90s, that President George H.W. Bush gave us the nickname Little Beirut. And now, obviously, the president called us a beehive of terrorism. And I think people take a lot of pride in both nicknames. So there is this very experienced activist community, right? And a lot of what that's done, because a lot of the people who have kind of become or attempted to become sort of more faces for the movement are pretty new to Portland activism. The veteran activists, most of what they've been doing is handling the human infrastructure parts of the protests for like the folks who are newer to kind of do the stuff that they've been doing and keep the movement going. But another chunk of it is just, you know, a significant number of the people that we've seen out in the street regularly were folks who were, you know, probably didn't have a long history of radical left-wing activism. Kind of more Women's March stuff than Black Bloc stuff. Assaulted repeatedly and tear gassed repeatedly by police tends to radicalize people pretty quickly. And I think there's also one of the things we saw, particularly with like the Wall of Moms, you know, who at least on one night I saw trying to batter down the doors of a federal courthouse, at least a decent number of them, who have kind of been sitting in their homes watching all these horrible things happen on the news, right? As this administration has kind of grabbed for more power and executed more questionably legal or outright illegal behaviors. Finally, people had a chance to do something, to take physical action against kind of the agents, what they saw of this administration, and against an evil they saw, right? After all these years of watching video after video after video of cops shooting down Black people all over the country, there was finally enough nationwide rage behind it that people could take action against that too. And there's a lot of just watching people hammer on the doors of these precincts when I've seen the precincts themselves assaulted. A lot of what's happening is people needing to take out their anger and hatred of the police because of what the police have been doing. Physical symbol of police authority.
Ja, demonstrationerna och aktionerna i Portland fortsätter och kan enligt bedömare komma att bli en viktig fråga till det amerikanska valet i höst. Intervjuad i programmet var journalisten och Portlandbon Robert Evans. Mitt namn är Patrik Syk och du lyssnar på Aftonbladet Daily som är tillbaka imorgon igen med en ny fördjupning av ett aktuellt nyhetsämne. På återhörande då.